This week on the Drag Team Podcast, we talked to radio racer Marty Stinnett about his badass small block, twin turbo Mustang, radio versus the world racing, and his views on how to approach race day. So, pull those belts tight. Get ready to put into the beams. The Drag Team Podcast starts now. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Drag Zine Podcast. I'm your host, Senior Associate Editor Brian Wagner. Marty Stinnett joins me this week on the podcast. Great guy, always smiling, always having fun, and gets to kind of talk about what drives him to race and his racing program in general. So it's a lot of fun to hear his enthusiasm. So, you know, without further ado, let's get this drag racing party started. All right, this week on the Drag Zine Podcast, my guest is radial tire extraordinaire racer Marty Stinnett. What's going on, Marty?
Not a whole lot, bud. How are you?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Getting ready. It's about that time of the year for us to make another trip down to South Georgia for some No Mercy action, right?
That's right. That's right. It's coming up quick.
No doubt. No doubt. After the Sweet 16, you know, what have y'all been doing this year to kind of get your radio program lined up for another round of action?
Well, after Sweet 16, we had pulled the motor down, was going to freshen it up, get ready for Tyler's race there at Bowling Green. We found the block was hurt a little bit down there by the crank. We, at that point there, went ahead and talked to some places about getting the block fixed, and in the meantime also went ahead and ordered a billet block for it.
Ooh.
Yeah. So we've got that in and got the motor together, getting it back in the car. And hopefully that'll let us maybe use these turbos a little bit more to their fuller potential.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about billet is it's the strength that it adds. So you can kind of put the screws to it and not worry about, you know, there being a high energy disassembly under the hood.
Yeah. I'm hoping it'll be a little stronger. Our cast blocks did real good for us, but we had to make some changes there, move some things around to hopefully open up the main studs there so that we could get a little more strength out of the main web for the main bearing. We were distorting that on our other block a little bit.
And is this still a smaller cubic inch engine?
Yeah, it's the exact same engine, except the block is now billet. The heads are still cast aluminum, as a matter of fact. I mean, it's the same heads, same crank, rods, pistons, everything. It's just got a billet block now with some cross-bolted mains as opposed to a cast aluminum block.
What cubic
the money really about? Wasn't getting that much different between a cast block and the billet block, so we just went ahead and stepped up and got the billet block this time around.
What cubic inch is that motor?
It's 470 cubic inch.
That's insane that you go that fast with that, you know.
Dude, what's really cool about it, I mean, you look at the thing, like, you walk by, and it looks so tiny compared to the Hemis and the 481Xs and even the big blocks and stuff. We had a, back at, I think it was No Mercy, what was it, 8 or 9, the one where we were number one qualifier. In RVW, an old boy came by and he looked at it, and I won't use his exact language, but he said, dude, there is no way this thing's outrunning him. He's look at them MF and valve covers, they're like, and he knew like the part number to Moroso. He's like, those are like a 7400 Moroso valve cover off the shelf, no way, you know. I mean, he was tore up about it. Oh, so it was kind of cool.
And I'm sure, you know, the competitors are torn up about it, because I remember when you ripped that pass off and everybody just, there was like a brief moment of silence and everybody went bananas for it, because it was gnarly to see that little engine just absolutely just doing work like that.
I promise you, when we went up there, while they might have expected a decent performance, nobody was expecting that car to be number one qualifier at that event.
Oh, yeah.
Including me. I wouldn't expect it to be number one qualifier, but it worked out well.
Is that one of those deals where you get your time slip and you're like, is there a timing system mistake? Did he knock a cone? What happened?
Yeah, you're like what the heck? See, of course, I can see the boards, you know, in the car, and I'm a pretty I'm fairly laid back, but I get pretty excited too, you know, and I saw it. And to be honest with you, because I think we went number one like the second or third round, like the second round of qualifying, I think it was. And we stayed number one all through qualifying. even through what I call the home run derby at night. We actually didn't even go up for the final round of qualifying that night because, like I told my guys, I said, look, man, most of these guys blow their crap up. They're, you know, they've got stuff to fix it with. I said, we don't. So we're out till race time. You know, we're parking it. And by the grace of God, we stayed number one, which was kind of cool, really. I mean, because there's some awesome competition, you know, in RVW, brother. I mean, it's top-notch guys and teams, no doubt.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's part of what endears the fans to you is just your very down-to-earth and humble attitude, and you guys work hard. You know, being from seeing what we get to see on the media side of things, you guys hustle for what you have. And you, remember the Sweet 16, you guys had a little bit of the first one, a little bit of the brush up with the wall, but there wasn't even a doubt in the mind that you guys were like, yeah, it's fixable, let's do it, and you got her done, right?
Yeah, we had an unfortunate incident where some of the steering didn't work right, and we brushed the wall early on, like the very first pass.
Yeah, it was
the first
Sweet 16. It was a very, very first qualifier.
Yeah, man, the very first deal, and so we missed a few of the rounds of qualifying, several, but yeah, we knew as soon as we looked it over and thought it was fixable, we knew we was going to go to work, and that goes to speak to the guys that show up and help. And that are involved in my program, man. It's a matter of basically, it's not really me. It's the awesome people that are around me that make me look good, or that lets our team shine like that. Really, I mean, there's no doubt.
And that's part of the attitude you have to have. And I think, you know, you just see in a lot of high level racing in general. This past weekend, I went to the World 100 Dirt Track race, and those guys, I mean, if there's a straight body panel on the car, they're mad because they're obviously running at the back and they weren't getting the action. But you saw some of those guys tear up cars where I'm like, oh, they're done for the weekend. Nope, they stayed up all night, thrashed, got it back together, and, you know, made hot laps the next day. And, you know, any level of, you know, heads-up drag racing, you know, you have that same attitude where it's like, if it doesn't need to go on a jig table or the engine doesn't need to have anything done that can't be done within a 50-mile radius, oh, we're still racing.
Oh, brother, yeah. I mean, of course, you've always looked at the safety factor. You're not going to – because this stuff is dangerous inherently anyway. So you don't want to overstep those boundaries because we all have a false sense of in control, so to speak, you know. But you definitely look at it, assess it, and decide, you know, hey, this is, you know, still within what the means of safety. Let's go ahead and work our tail off to get this done. You know, we talk about motor parts. You know, we've been in Atlanta at Commerce, Georgia, at an NMCA event, torched ahead on our small block Ford back several years ago. And Jackie McCarty was nice enough to call his machinist guy, and he waited for us. And we drove, me and Wade Hopkins and Jeff Burns, pulled the head off, threw it in my truck, and we drove all the way to Bristol, Tennessee to weld that. We welded the head up that night. Wade welded it up. Jeff and the gentleman there at Jackie's shop, man, I wish I could think of his name because he was a great guy too. They machined the head and fixed it, and we were back at 7 o'clock the next morning putting the head on. I mean, that shows how dedicated and how awesome the people around you are and share that same passion and enthusiasm for competitiveness. I mean, you know, we want to be competitive, and so you work, do everything you can to try to be.
Oh, yeah. Warren Johnson at the U.S. Nationals told the story about the one win. His most memorable win was he hurt his car there, flew on a plane with his cylinder head as his carry-on, fixed it at his shop, and flew back to the race and won the race.
Brother, that's crazy.
I mean, you know, you hear about stuff like that all the time, and people just, you know, as a fan, I think, you know, you get to go home, you know, or go back to the hotel after the race. And a lot of times, you know, I'm leaving the track at like midnight, 1 a.m. doing coverage, and I'll see teams still there, like elbow deep into starting to tear something down and try to fix it. And they're not, and you could see the look on their face. They all know it's going to be a long night. They're not talking. They just want to get it fixed so they can race.
They just want to do it. That's right. I like to stay at the track, and like my trailer's got a living quarters in it, so I stay, and you get to see a lot of that. I mean, almost every team there, and brother, it don't matter if they're the guy favored to win the race or if they're the guy struggling to qualify. Most everybody there is willing to work their tail off to just to make one more pass, just to be in the event, you know. And so you've got to respect that.
Oh, and we've jumped in to help other teams. You know, we've been at the shakedown before, and that one of our teammates was having issues, and, you know, we could have went back to the hotel, but we're like, nope, they got to, you know, we got to get this thing fixed. So there we are at 2 o'clock in the morning, ripping an engine apart. And you get down to the point where it's like, all right, you know, we're good to go. We're good to go. Then you get to that point where you realize, oh, we're not good to go. This thing's, you know, done. You're like, do I want to go back to the hotel? Or no, I'll just, you literally just went and slept in the truck for a little while just because, you know, it's part of the game. And, you know, it's the easiest way to get a little bit of sleep before you got to get up and start your daily routine on a vehicle.
Yeah. And that's the cool thing about this racing. There, almost anybody would help their competitor too. I mean, it don't even matter if you're going to run them the next round, you'll loan them apart. And that's because none of us, I guess, really want to win by default. You know, it's all, we're all great camaraderie, and it's most everybody anyway. And you try to help as many people as you can until you're on the start line.
Yeah. You know?
And then at that point there, you want to tear their head off and drag their tail down the track and win.
Nobody's got friends when there's three bulbs lit, right?
No, that's right. That's right.
And, you know, it's been to the point where I might or might not have been involved in a situation where there was a little bit of a slight organized delay so we could all make sure that one of our competitors was able to make it up the race. And, you know, Kurt Johnson rolled back up on the scooter, said, you guys going to come up and race? Yeah. We'll be up there in a minute. Don't worry.
Yeah,
don't
we're coming. We're coming.
And we're looking over at our friend like, fix your damn car.
Oh, yeah. I can't tell how many times I've had competitors tell me and me tell them the same thing. Look, man, you know, I'm not going until they make me go. So you do what you got to do to get it where you can go to.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting. I like to hear the different stories about how competitors get to where they've got. And, you know, you just don't magically, well, most people don't just decide, well, I'm going to go radio versus the world racing. You know, it's something you kind of get into. You know, what was your journey to make it to the point where you're going 370s with a small block?
Man, I was always a gearhead growing up. My dad was a gearhead. I was a gearhead. Hot rods, dirt bikes, stuff like that. And I raced motorcycles and stuff for years locally, got my pro license, wasn't really no threat to be a danger there, but really enjoyed it. And then I just got older and my responsibilities grew with my business. And I was like, well, I'm going to go drag racing, you know, again, or back to hot rods. I had never really done any organized drag racing, but I thought, well, I'm just going back. I'll go drag racing. I've got a roll cage, you know, I've got to get off dirt bikes and all this stuff. So I went and got an old car, and me and some buddies fixed it up and went bracket racing. Well, I struggled with going too fast to win a race. And I was like, okay. And bracket racing is tough, brother. You don't just go bracket racing and win.
Oh no.
Those guys, they're drivers. I mean, they can drive the starting line. You better be on the tree. They can drive the finish line. You know, I couldn't hardly tell if a guy was in front of me or not, you know, you give it away, but, and I just really, my heart was in like heads up stuff. And me and some buddies started doing some dirt, like mud drag stuff around here in Eddyville, where I'm from. And I needed some nitrous. So I ran across a little shop, Mitch Leidecker out of Ledbetter, Kentucky, Leidecker's Automotive. And him and a group of guys there locally, Stanley Sutton, PJ, Nathan Harrington, a bunch of buddies, they were doing this King of the Street stuff, KOS stuff. And we're basically street legal cars that were going around the local tracks and racing. And normally the tracks was doing it on like a test and tune night. They wouldn't even really run them on a race night hardly. So long story short, you know, I met those guys, got all in that, got excited about it, and sold my bracket car, got out of mud truck. Me and a buddy was kind of partners on, and I went King of the Street racing, just local heads up racing stuff with a nitrous car. I had a 67 Camaro. It was a back half deal with a 598 and two kits on it. Run it locally some. Some rule changes came along, so I had to get rid of it and get a stock suspension car. I wound up with Tony Rittenire's old 68 Camaro, a green, real dark green 68 Camaro that actually run in Outlaw Drag Radial years ago. Wound up with it. Saw a thing on the Yellow Bullet about Lights Out, Duck's first Lights Out race down in Georgia, and had success here locally. The Lord blessed me. We'd won a bunch of local events and got runner-up in a bunch and got my tail drug a bunch. I mean, just all the good stuff that goes with drag racing. And I thought, man, I want to go to this race. And man, we went to it, and I was bit. It was such an event. You know, we got there. I think we showed up on like Friday, which we thought was a big deal. And then, techs like crazy long, and all the people, you're hanging out in the tech line and shooting shit with people, and it's just kind of cool. I was bit, and we run Outlaw 275 that weekend. And from there, that's just where it kind of took off. You know, I wound up getting rid of the 68 Camaro leaf spring nitrous deal. And of course, the class rules, everything was stock suspension. And at the time, what was the superior stock suspension? Well, Mustang, you know, the unequal four link setup under a Mustang, and they were light, aftermarket that was cheap. And I was definitely still very budget minded. So, wound up, I had sold that car and another old car, and I went and bought a twin turbo SN 95, 96 Cobra. It was a 96 Cobra, and with a small block Ford twin turbos. I seeked out, it had some chassis issues and stuff with it, but I knew from going drag racing and going to the track, I knew the money I was spending. And I had met Sean Ayers and Jeff Reed along the way, and I knew about Wade Hopkins from John Kalivas, you know, who didn't know about John. And at that point I thought, well, look, man, this is cool. This car's bad. I need some help getting it lined out. So I reached out to Wade Hopkins, and I knew that I could spend my money with getting Wade helping me. I had a budget, and that I could spend X number of dollars and get him to help me get the car set up, and that I would be money ahead of me going to the track by myself. So, or just a buddy, you know, because you can't hardly run these things anymore by yourself. So I seeked out Wade, and the rest was history, man. It, you know, we hit it off well. Matter of fact, Wade, he told me bring the car down. He'd look at it, let me know if he would work on it or not. And I was like, man, who's this guy? You know, but it turns out it's a pretty wise decision, really, to make sure you're not just calling with some sort of rag. It's unsafe or something. So.
Yeah, you don't want to, as a tuner, you don't want to be stuck with a total monster nightmare.
Yeah, you know, well, you couldn't, you know, anybody could call and say, you got this pretty cool car, you want some help setting up. You tell them, yeah, they show up with it, and then it's like, no, man, this thing ain't safe, no way. But we did, I got with Wade there, and we run a bunch of Outlaw 275 stuff. The old car started coming around pretty good. I had some, issues with the engine that was in it, the heads. They were Blue Thunder heads. Not the 4.6 Blue Thunders. I forget what the. Anyway, they were a Blue Thunder casting that was bad about. The porosity was bad on them. They would come undone pretty easy. And mine come undone, of course. Wade had some heads and an intake and an engine builder buddy named Jeff Burns. And he introduced me to Jeff, and we all got together and come up with a plan and put a little small block together that wound up being the fastest car on 275s for a long time. So hit and miss. And we swapped that title back and forth with John Kalivas. I mean, so anytime you can swap a record back and forth with John Kalivas, you're having a pretty good day, brother.
Oh yeah. That's definitely,
yeah.
That's definitely some rare air right there to be running with someone like John, for sure.
Oh, listen, man, it was freaking awesome. You know, John had that white SN car, and my car was black. By no means was I a threat to John. You know, he was a multi-time champion, and his record stands for itself, very good. But at there, for that little brief time and period, you know, our cars, me and him, we swapped up the record back and forth. Then David Pearson, man, you know, Little Evil, man, one of my best, most favorite races of all time was at the Civil Wars in Mooresville, I don't remember now. But anyway, me and David Pearson were running each other in the final, and we go up there, and neither one of us would stage, like a staging duel, not a burn down, but just an actual staging duel, just sitting there, cars idling, the big old his blower carver. My turbo car, you know, boom, 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 boom. It was freaking awesome. It was the starter waved us in twice. Nobody would move. And finally, my old car started warming up. I had to go on in. But it was awesome. That was one of my most favorite races of all time right there, or passes of all time. And I actually wound up winning, so that helps too. But
that makes the memory even better.
I was so, dude, I was so excited. It was my first, like, what I called big event win. And I'm hooting and hollering and throwing a cussing fit at the end of the track, just celebrating. I get out of my car, and David's already out of his car and leaned up against the front, you know, and he's disappointed like anybody would be. Of course, I don't know if you know David, but, you know, you don't want to disappoint David too much.
Yeah.
But he looks like he could hurt you. But I get out of the car, and I'm tickled to death, and I'm trying not to be a jerk by it, like I'm rubbing it in. And I look at David, and I was like, Dave, I know you are so disappointed, and I'm very sorry, but I am so freaking happy right now. He was so cool with it. He's like, man, that was really awesome. He said that staging duel was killer. It was cool. We had a big time.
Yeah, that's what I think makes the race seem fun, you know, with heads up stuff, is having stuff like that, having those battles with different people, and it kind of gets the fans behind it. And it kind of reminds me again of, you know, being at that dirt track race this weekend when they introduced Scott Blomquist, who in the late model world, you either love him or hate him, and it becomes painfully obvious when they announced him, the level of cheers and boos that were going on. And, you know, it's stuff like that, you know, that where you can have those rivalries and that stuff that really brings the fans in and makes them excited for it.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw an interview or one of Steve Jackson's videos, you know, which they make the rounds like crazy. You know, he said it pretty good, really. He said, I don't care if you love me or hate me, as long as you've got passion for what's going on, whether you're using that passion to root against me or rooting for me. He said, use that passion, you know, and be there, and or something to that effect. And it was like, dude, that is so true right there. I mean, it's awesome for somebody to have so much passion and to pull so hard. Because, dude, when you go the line, even when you go with a buddy, okay, somebody that you're really pulling for, what you're digging, when that car leaves the starting line, you are so vested in it, or so invested in it, you feel so, you're pulling so hard and want so much for that car to win that race. It's crazy. I mean, it's crazy. You're just as, almost just as excited as the driver.
Oh,
if not so.
And it's interesting to see those reactions on the starting line of watching people, like, they're trying to will their car that they're rooting for to victory.
Yeah. You know, like you're trying to push it to the, you know, to the finish line first. It's you know, me and Wade Hopkins that tunes the car, you know, we've talked about it. He's like, dude, I thought I was going to puke on the start line. I was, you know, so tore up. But, you know, they get everybody on that team for that car, including the fans for that car. They are so passionate about it and pulling so hard for it. And they ride those highs and lows with you when you win or lose, you know. So it's really cool. And I, you know, I love it when somebody comes by to talk about the car there at the track. I really dig that too.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's that fun fan interaction. If we're not thrashing on the car and someone comes by and they're gushing over the car, or they've got a son or daughter, you know, the owner of the car, he'll be like, you know, they want to sit in the car.
Right.
And, you know, he'll put them in the car, and the parents will be like, oh, I don't want them to break anything. And Ray will be like, it's not like they can't do anything worse to this car than I've already done to it.
Hey, brother, that's a fact. I tell them all the time, I say, you're not going to do anything to this thing I haven't already done to it, I promise. And there's videos on YouTube to prove it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're one of those racers that has that unfortunate distinction of going from being a driver to a pilot. And by a pilot, you're just a passenger, right?
Yeah. Essentially, at that point, you're just along for the ride.
What's it like to go from, I guess, you know, you're driving to all of a sudden, you know, the old Ricky Bobby, you know, you're in there going, oh, this isn't good. You know, what's that?
Oh, man,
like?
Listen, my flyaway deal, the pass that it flew away on, we had just reset the small block record and radials.
I remember that.
I think the record was like 392 something that we had with our small block Ford that we had set in August at a race in St. Louis. Didn't even know we had set it. And Keith Berry had sent me a message on Facebook, I think, congratulate me for setting that record. And I'm like, what? Did we really? So we checked it out, and sure enough, we had, you know, but we blew the motor up doing it. The little poor little small block Ford. We torched the heads and the block, and it wasn't repairable in time to get to No Mercy. So we wound up with the small block Chevy that Wade was building for his car, and wound up putting it in my car. But it was like the third pass on the motor. Went a 388, and then, of course, it was crazy windy that day because of one of the hurricanes coming from out west. Actually, I had been with my family on vacation in Myrtle Beach, and I had left like 2 days early to come to the drag race. And my wife and kids and another family that was there with, they had to leave early because of the hurricane coming in. So the winds and stuff were crazy high that day. It was just like a perfect storm of crap that went wrong that like never happens hardly ever. But of course, you know, it did to me or to us. And as the car started around, because there was no sign of any trouble, no sign at all. You know, I mean, I saw the 388. I was tickled. I had been reached up, clicked the car off. You know, it wasn't even running. And then it started around. And honestly, the first thought in my mind was, oh man, I don't want it to hit the wall so hard that we can't make the next round. Well, then as it came on around and went, because it gets fairly quiet and very smooth. There's no, you realize now that there is no rolling, that you're now flying. At that point, I was like, uh-oh, you know. And as the car flipped up, you know, you start to get disoriented. And I remember just thinking, dear Lord, please just don't let it catch on fire. And that relates back to watching the car on fire with Lyle Barnett in it, you know, previously at the Lights Out race that same year. And, you know, dude, whenever that's going on and you know that person there, that's your friend in that car, it freaks you out. So, and I was like, you know, please don't catch on fire. Please don't catch on fire. As the car slid down the track, it come to a stop. And I think it was Jason Carter. I think he was the first one there, I believe. And the first words out of his mouth are, it's not on fire. And I was like, oh, Jesus, thank you for letting me know. And at that point there, some of the urgency of, because I had then got my belts undone and I was coming out of the car. Just in case. But and then once he told me it wasn't on fire at that point, that was a major relief. But dude, the car laid down inside the car with me. It was not violent. I mean, you knew it was ugly on the outside, but it wasn't violent. It wasn't rough. I didn't get a scratch. I wasn't even sore the next day.
Wow.
Other than my drag racing just being crushed and thinking, oh, this is it. We're done.
Pocketbook and line of credit just went ouch.
Oh, dude, yeah, it was insane. And the people, man, oh my gosh, the people that come by to show support. This was my first year of t-shirts, okay, and I had showed up with a few t-shirts, and I had people coming over there to buy t-shirts and paying $100 for a t-shirt and not want to change. You know, I mean, it's just a huge show of support. I couldn't even begin to name off the people at that racetrack that came by. I mean, it was a group of guys there beside me. Man, Ron Hamby and his whole bunch, Petey, just John DC Small, everybody over there. Man, they passed the hat and come by. I mean, it touched me. It touched me. It was really something. And I hit the wall at Atlanta in Commerce, Georgia. The people at that point there, brother, I thought, you know, look, maybe this just ain't it. Maybe I'm just done. But the people that reached out to me that were of importance to me in my mind of racing, there's so many. Of course, my whole team, I guess I should back up a bit. Even, you know, my whole team, Wade, Jeff, those guys were so great. So supportive, because we're all egomaniacs. No, we don't like to fail like that, right? So, during that moment, it's terrible. It's terrible because you're like, this sucks. But the support that my whole team, those people around me showed, you know, said, look, basically, they're like, look, you want to race, we're gonna find a way to race. You know, if Marty Stennett's going to race, we're going to be there with you. So that touches you, and that goes a long way. And after, like I said, that second wreck, the people that have no reason to reach out to you other than just to say, hey, we think you're good for the sport. We want to help. You know, here's a few dollars to help get something back together. That's, you know, hey, look, we're behind you no matter what you need. You let us know if we can help. My sponsors that stepped up during time, both those times, it's crazy. I mean, they're like family. You know? So it's awesome. I don't know how else to say it other than I'm humbled, and it's amazing.
Oh yeah, I've been in that situation before. We, torn up the radio car, and you got to do the. In our case, we had to do the push of shame with the car back broken and not rolling right and creaking and stuff falling off it, and everybody's just kind of like looking as you get back to the pit, and we
Oh
get
yeah.
and you get it back, and the driver's upset, the crew guys were angry and upset. And then immediately it's like, all right, well, let's start tearing this thing apart and figure out what happened and, if it's fixable. And then you start getting those people, like you said, that start streaming in, and you get your sponsors and the friends that are like, hey, we'll help you do whatever you need to do. And you start feeling a little bit better. And then, it kind of lifts that moment when you know that there's people behind you and you think, all right, well, we can fix this. We can make it happen. And that's kind of like what drives us to keep wanting to do this sport. And then at the same time, when you see a friend, something like that happen, I've seen had friends crash cars. I'm like, hey, you need anything, you need an extra set of hands, I'll come help do whatever you got to do. And that's what encourages people to really keep going.
Oh, it is. It is because it's a blow. I just don't know how else to explain it. It's a blow, and you when you see a guy go through it, it's like, oh man, because it's way more than just a car. Sometimes it's the car that they've had for years and they love the car. It's the efforts it represents. That car represents the efforts, the money spent, the time spent, the relationships built and put around that car to push that car forward. So that's why there's so much invest, because you are so invested in it, I guess.
Oh yeah, and it's the memories around it. It's the trips to the track. It's everything around that like you said, it doesn't matter. I think whatever level of racing you're at, from a bracket racer up to a nitro racer, it's the memories and the friends and everything you build around it. Why you get so attached to racing and the cars that it makes it really hard for some people to walk away.
Yeah. It's definitely hard to walk away from. It's a terrible drug.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's I have this saying, I'd be the world's worst rich person if I won the lottery, because I look at anything and I'm like, what could I do to make that faster or modify
Yeah.
it?
Yeah. I tie that into my race program.
Yeah, it's like you find a way to justify it. It's like, man, I gotta do something to that.
Yeah.
The only vehicle I've ever left completely stock that I haven't done anything to is my little beater 2008 Toyota Yaris, just because it's good on gas mileage. And it's like, what do I really need to do to this thing? And I don't want to fall down that rabbit hole, because then I actually started looking. I'm like, wow, you can get blowers for these things. I need a blower for my Toyota Yaris. My wife looked at me. She goes, no, you don't. You don't.
No, it's not really, really, you don't.
Like, you're right. But it's that finding that bleeding edge, and you had that terrible wreck, you had the comeback, and you had that issue at Atlanta, and you came back from that, and now you're getting ready to put this next package together. With what you see, what do you think this package is gonna be able to do for you?
Man, I'm just going to be honest with you, and some people might think I'm crazy or we're crazy, but I don't see no reason this little small block and this car, this stockish wheelbase Mustang, won't run 350s. Now it won't probably not this go around here at No Mercy. I guess it's totally off the table, but ultimately we're just like every other team. We want to be the baddest sucker out there. We want to be not. While being the fastest small block is crazy awesome. I mean, I can't tell you how cool it is, really. And but we want to be the baddest radial car on the planet. That's our goal. That's our push is for to take this little Mustang and beat the all billet 640 whatever inch gigantic turbos, blowers, Hemis, 41Xs, whatever, pro mods, not pro mods, whatever it is, and win. It's our goal is to win races.
And I think that's, kind of what drives ultimately. There are no wallflowers in radial versus the world or heads up racing. It's a bunch of type A personality guys that want to beat the heads in on everybody else and be the best. That's pretty
Kind of,
much it.
yeah. It's We were, let's see it, I don't, one of the Georgia races there, and I was shooting the crap there. I was talking with a bunch of guys, and Big Chief was there, and I'm pretty sure it was him. And he looks at me, and he's like, you ain't fooling nobody with this, Mr. Nice Guy. He said, I know what you are. He said, you want to be a dream crusher. You're a dream crusher. I said, whatever. I ain't no dream crusher. Let's see. He said, so we pull up out of the starting line, maybe it wasn't him on that one, I don't remember, but it basically you pull up to the starting line just like everybody there. I mean, everybody there in Radio Versus the World, when you get beside them on the starting line, their goal is to crush you. I mean, they want to win. And that's our goal too, is to win that race. It even if it's just by milliseconds, win that race, So.
Oh yeah. And it's funny. I don't see Ruby on the kind of trash talk. One of the best trash, Jason Lee from PTP.
Yes.
Probably one of the best trash talkers on earth. That dude, when we would race him, some of the stuff he would say, I definitely can't repeat exactly it word for word because he uses a lot of extremely colorful language. But I remember one time, we pulled up lanes and we're getting ready, and he said, "Hey, I got a surprise for you." We're like, "What?" The driver's like, "What?" He goes, "I put some confetti in the parachutes, so when I beat your head at the end, it's gonna be a party at the top end when I pop those chutes." I'm like, "Dude, that's cold-blooded." Just.
Come on, but it's kind of fun, but it never works for me, dude. If I pop my mouth off, I have to eat my words so big. I've done it. Me and let's see, years ago, I was going to a race in North Carolina somewhere, and I think it was me and Robbie Cazal. Let's see. Anyway, we were shooting the crap. It was on Yellow Bullet, somewhere along the line. And one of them was like, "Don't even bother bringing that turbo car. Nitrous car is going to win this race." And I pop off something like, "Y'all better have your high altitude tune-ups ready, because when I come and spool this twin turbo Jeff Burns small block Ford up, I'm taking all the oxygen out of there," or something crazy like that. And long story short, I get there to the race. We struggle with getting down the track. First round, who do I have to run? Barry and Robbie Cazal. And what happens? They drag my tail. I was like, well, that was fitting.
Yeah.
So I think it's next time I'll keep my mouth shut. But it was all done in good fun, It was, oh, but it was like, well, and so anytime I do that, it doesn't work out well for me. So I've learned to just kind of keep my mouth shut.
Walk softly, carry a big camshaft, right?
There you go. There you go. That's right.
Now,
That's right.
you said.
Unless I'm messing with Ziff Hudson, me and Ziff, but I like to mess with Ziff a little bit.
Yeah, as long as Ziff's
Because I
cool with
think
it.
because I think he enjoys messing with me pretty good.
Ziff's a big dude. I don't know if I'd want to make him angry. You might twist your head
Bah,
off.
whatever. He's whatever,
I love Ziff.
We're
Ziff looks so angry and intimidating, but he's such a nice guy.
yeah, he is such a nice guy. He's like me. He's just a demo wrecker operator. He's fun to shoot the crap with.
I tell him, I try to take his picture. I'm like, I swear you look like you're going to reach through my camera and beat me with it. And then, after I take the picture, then he smiles. I'm like, dude, you're doing it wrong. You got to
Yeah,
smile
so this is
before
all
the
backwards.
picture.
I see, that's just like Ziff, all backwards and wrong. Just not do it right.
Now.
Yeah, he's not gonna send me a text every now and then. "Hey, Mister Number Two," like, whatever, jerk. I said, "Yeah, on the show and shine."
Yeah, that car is a pretty
Oh man, it's a work of art. What are you talking about? It's gorgeous.
Yeah, his car definitely would probably win a show and shine, then could win the race at the same
Oh
weekend.
yeah. Oh, it's capable of it.
Now, you said something interesting there about running in the 350s, which to me doesn't seem that's a kind of there's a lot to unpack there for the simple fact that one of the cool things about Radial versus the World is all the different combinations and the weight breaks and how all that works and how you can kind of play the rules game. And with a light small block car, you could pull that off.
Oh yeah, if I could get my car to the actual weight of what the rules let me be, they'd say they're in trouble. There I go. That's gonna get me in trouble. That's gonna bite me in my butt, Brian.
Well, then you can take all the weight out and weight jack the car as you need it. But again, it's almost like those grudge cars. If you've ever had, I had to help push a grudge car one time that was had an issue, needed moved off the starting line during testing. And I'm expecting, you know, to really have to put my back into this car and push it. And I swear I could have flicked that thing and it would have rolled 20 yards.
Yeah. It's a matter of working the advantages of each combination, you know, whether it be tons of horsepower or lightweight. You know, I dig the cars. Right now, it hurts my soul to think to have to go to a Pro Mod chassis. I don't want to have to go to a Pro Mod chassis. I like my car, and I like it looking like a car. Nothing wrong with the guys running the Pro Mod chassis. It's definitely, they're way smarter than I am, and it's definitely intelligent. But I want my car to look like a car, and that's that right now. But of course, ultimately, as we chase the class, and if we stay in it, and we'll do what we got to do to try to be competitive within our budget and capabilities. I really dig the car right now. I dig the car. I mean, when my little car, dude, it was a video I saw somewhere. My car is coming to the starting line. It was still black. Okay, it's coming to the starting line, and one of the guys, the Pro Mods, not even sure who, but they're coming to the starting line too. And the guy taking the video, it's like videoing with a phone, and he's like, "Oh man, you know, this poor dude here, he's got no idea what's fixing to happen to him." And he's talking about my car. He's talking about my little Mustang. He's like, "You know, this guy's got no idea. You know, this is going to be ugly. This is going to be ugly." And come up there, and, you know, we do burnouts. And, of course, I think it was a blower car. So, of course, they're radical. They're awesome on burnouts. I love blower cars doing burnouts. They're crazy cool. But anyway, knocking this burnout out, you know, and it's just looking worse for me. It's like, man, this ain't going to be good. This poor guy, you know, and he's talking to his buddy, you know, "Hey, man, this poor Mustang, look, this dude, he's just going to get drugged. He's going to get drugged." And all this stuff. And we come up there, and the blower car stages, and my little car starts staging, and you hear the RPMs revving on the little small block, and then the light goes down, and phew, man, and my car made a really killer pass, and we win the race. He's like, damn, did you see that? And then some dude's like, "Man, that's like the fastest small block in the country. What are you talking about?" And all that. But it was kind of, it's cool. I mean, I like that factor, I guess. You know, I really dig that. So that's kind of the coolness, cool factor of my car to me.
Well, it's not just the cool factor of it. I mean, you look at some of the people that have won Radio versus the World or done well in it. Alex Laughlin, that Corvette stock wheelbase.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yes.
Tim Slavens, you know, that car's, you know, I think it's still a steel back half car.
I love that because I know those guys and I loved seeing them have that success. That is so crazy awesome because I've known Mark Tito Werthausen. I've known Mark for years from back whenever I had my old green Lease Frank Camaro that I'd got from my Tony Rittenauer. I mean, as a matter of fact, he helped me with it some. You know, I went all the way over to see him run there at the Ozark and what was it, their Street Machine Nationals or something, I think, went to. So to see those guys have that success, they have worked so hard, it's freaking awesome. I mean, it's awesome.
Oh, and that's not a car you sleep on at all, because it was kind of funny.
Hey, no, brother.
Everybody
drug my tail at one race. I watched him get 20 mile an hour faster than me down there at the end. I told him, I said, "Dude, it's like watching you just at the end of the track. We're running side by side about 400 foot. You just go, brawl." It's like, this sucks so bad.
Well, it's it's the worst feeling ever. It's like, you know, I always say when I'm in a bracket race and I know I screwed up terribly on the starting line, and the dude hung a fender on you for the entire length of the track. It's like, this sucks. This just sucks.
You start leaning forward in your belts, and then you go, "Come on, go, go."
And you're just hoping, man, I hope, you know, in bracket racing, it's like, man, I hope they make a dumber mistake at the top end than what I made at the starting line. And, you know, it's a terrible feeling.
Oh, it is. I mean, we run these little lightweight, even like little steering wheels, lightweight. And I've got to the track, the steering wheel be bent from where you were pushing on the car trying to get it to go. So it's like, come on.
Oh, yeah. Would
you just do something?
Every racer does that for sure. And
oh, yeah.
You know, and the whole deal with Radio versus the World and where it's going, you know, and how quick the cars are and, you know, kind of balancing the rules, you know, the record right now is a 357, but it's by a combination that's been kind of written out of the rule book. But do you think we're going to see I don't think you're going to see at No Mercy anybody really go a whole lot faster than that. But do you think next year you're going to see something?
Man, I don't know. It depends on what Donald does with the rules, just to be honest. I mean, it's, you know, I know, first off, I'm not a rule maker. And I don't want that responsibility. These poor guys,
That's the worst
Donald,
job ever. Worst
John,
job
said,
ever.
brother, you ain't kidding. They get beat up from all sides. They can't do nothing right. I give them my respect. That being said, it's a matter, RVW, it's pretty tight, really, for the caliber of cars that you've got in it. To take these type of cars and have them run as tight as they did, say, at Sweet 16 2.0, that's pretty good, really. At X275, a tenth will separate the top 10 or 15 cars. Come on, dude. That's tough. So they're doing their best. And when it ever crosses me up, I promise you I'll be right there crying too, complaining. But it's just a matter right now, RVW, it just depends on what Donald does with rules. If he takes weight off, gives too much weight to one of the high horsepower combos, they'll run away with it. For example, like my combo, I'm sure that somebody could start from scratch and build a purpose-built car to go like my car and get it lighter. But, it'd be very expensive and really tough to do. So my combo is about as light as it can get. And I still can't get to the actual minimum. I like it just a little bit. But so it's just a matter of what happens with the rules. If any rules get tweaked around wrong, next thing you know, one combo could jump way out front. And that's that's where we round up, I guess, in the 350s is some of the weight off the higher horsepower cars come down and boom, next thing you know, there they are, which, not that I'm crying. I mean, we're close. We're 365 with a car that doesn't even have a locked up converter in it yet. So I'm not, we're not rolling over and playing dead by no means. We're continuing to push and try to optimize what we've got and be as fast as we can possibly be too. Well, and I think we can. I don't know that we'll run in the deep 50s, but I think this car can run 350s.
What I think is that the home run numbers are neat. It's awesome to see those big numbers. But I think if you're going to win races consistently in that class, what it's turned into now, it's going to be in the 360s to consistently win, because you can't have that home run tune-up in it all the time.
You can't all the time, and lots of times it'll bite you. But it's easy to get caught up in that home run derby business. I've done it too. But at the same time, I mean, we all say that too. And lots of times it's to provide us hope. But the reality is, if you've got a faster car, it definitely don't hurt your chances of winning the race.
Yeah.
At that point, it's just a matter of racing smart. But it's the teams. It's getting tough. You've got teams with complete spare engines. RVW is quickly becoming not that it wasn't already a high end class, but you're going to have to be, you're going to want it pretty bad and have good support and have the budget there to run it and run with them, because you can't have your tongue hanging out on every pass and then the guy beside you is doing the same thing, but he's got a spare bullet and you're sitting there with a set of head gaskets. It's not going to work.
Well, what I kind of jokingly said after, the Sweet 16 2.0, I said the people's phones that were probably ringing the loudest that Monday were engine builders across the country and suppliers.
Let that be a fact.
I mean,
no doubt.
We were sitting there joking. We're like, can you even total up how much monetary carnage there was at that race with people tearing stuff up?
Oh, it's insane. But it's because, you've got such a concentrated effort. You've got the tracks there. Weather's pretty good. You can make the horsepower. So at that, and you've got all, like you said, the type A personalities. Everybody's there pushing as hard as they can push, and it makes big leaps whenever you do that.
Oh, yeah, and you said it changes the attitude on how you tune the car up. That's talking with some of the Nitro teams, the lesser funded teams, not, the big major teams, that they'll go, surprisingly, they'll go an entire weekend with the same engine, whereas someone like JFR Racing, they got literally a stack of short blocks sitting in the hauler. So
yeah, ready to go.
If they tear something up and it's too bad that they can't, you know, if they don't think they can fix the bullet that's in there, it's like, all right, well, drag that one out of the trailer and put it in there. And it, that's what separates the ability to really put the screws to a car to an absolute insane level versus, you know, just trying to keep it alive.
Well, it's definitely another tool. I mean, it doesn't guarantee success. But it's another tool, you know, it's just, and the more tools you can have to in your toolbox, be it spare motor or data or whatever, any little thing that you can have to help push you forward to an advantage is just that. I mean, it helps you. So it's, and not knocking guys that can do it yet. Eventually, you know, hopefully by next season, I'll have enough spare parts to have pretty close to a spare motor. I mean, you know, we fixed my block from Sweet 16 and all that stuff, and I'll do my best to put it together. We'll get it together this winter. But there's nothing against it, but it's just, it's an asset. It's a tool. It's definitely not a bad thing for that team. It's definitely an advantage to have that, just no doubt.
It's funny you mentioned data, and that I never realized how important data really was until I went full drag racing nerd, and as much time as I spend at the track now, and just how important having that data is. As a racer, you know, usually, you know, as a tuner and as a racer, you'll see those guys, the first thing that they're doing is they're pulling that, you know, that race pack card or, you know, whatever they've got, downloading it. You know, are you really looking at that actively? Is it, when you tune the car, or is that just you leave it up to the tuner and let them do their own deal?
No, Wade is the tuner of the car. Let there be no doubt, no confusion or nothing like that. But I definitely look at it too. And we have a lot of discussions back and forth, and we're just, you know, Wade is a great tuner. He's one of the best in the country, in my opinion. But we work really well together also. I mean, I think that together, that me and him and Jeff Burns, he's a major key part of my core team there. We just work really well together and have a good rapport, a lot of respect, and listen to each other. And so, yeah, I definitely look at it too, you know, to any, you know, just, man, it's more eyes, you know, it's some more eyes see stuff sometimes. So it doesn't hurt a thing. I look at it. Jeff look at some. Wade looks at it a bunch. But yeah, it's so definitely I look at it too. And it's so important, dude. The data. Of course, my car is all fuel tech. The whole fuel tech runs the whole car. Except I've got a mag still right now. Saving my pennies. I'll get one of these days. I'll get the fancy coil on plug. Anyway, fuel tech, if you're listening to me, there you go, buddy. It's a cold on plug from Marty Stinnett's car. Anyway, it's crazy. The data is so important. I mean, if you make a killer pass and you, for some reason you have no data, it's such a heartbreaker. It's almost like the pass didn't even happen. It's like, oh no. It's important, man. It's a key factor. You gotta have it.
Well, it's funny that you say, you know, everybody's got to kind of work together and talk it out. And that's one of the things that, again, you know, the data that's being recorded is one thing. But if you have a couple teammates around, that kind of helps too, because then you can bring in your data if you're not tuning the car, if you're just the driver, what you felt or saw in the car. And then the crew guys can talk about what they saw on the line, because, again, you might be seeing something physically that the car is doing that's a little bit weird that isn't necessarily even showing up in the data for the run.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's of course, unfortunately we don't have a whole lot of cars like with the same combination stuff as mine, but that's definitely no doubt. That's a plus too. I mean, look at the Proline machine, dude, you know, multiple cars with multiple same combinations, top-notch tuners share, you know, and I'm sure that they talk amongst themselves. I don't know how much information they share, but let's say, you know, they talk amongst themselves. That's definitely, you know, that's definitely a good thing or a positive thing for your race program to have that type of data available or at your access or what have you, you know, especially when you come with some little crazy fluke thing at the cars and when they do those crazy crap, you know, it never hurts to, you know, you, be able to talk to somebody. They're like, oh man, you know, here mine was doing that, and this is what it was. It was crazy. You know, it took us a month to find it. So, you know, that's definitely a good thing too, to have that type of backup. But the data, man, it's crazy important. It's crazy. It's as important as your engine and torque converter and gears. It's just a major part of the setup.
Oh yeah, and if you talk to someone like Shannon Davis and he starts rattling off all the different data and everything that his different, you know, gizmos can look at, and then I think that's what's really continuing to push the performance of all drag racing cars in general, not just heads up cars, but even, you know, the bracket guys and what they're gleaming off data is being able to have all of this different just stuff to look at and having answers to questions you haven't even asked yet.
Oh yeah. You know, man, look, years ago, bracket racer dudes had notebooks and notes and weather and tire pressure and engine temperature and, you know, outside temperature for the oil and the shocks of the car, just all kinds of stuff. So it's data is king, as they say.
Oh, and you know, at a national event, watching the stock and super stock guys, kind of how what they're doing, and they'll literally be taking weather readings right up until they're told to come up to the ready line. And if they've got the ability to tune the car, or they've got someone with a laptop there, they're going to make a last second change like right then and there. And it's crazy to see how you would see that happening at the highest levels of heads up racing, and it's just trickling down more and more to every level.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it, to me, like I said, it's just the technology and that, and what people are putting into their different rides and the strategy of it is what makes all the different levels of drag racing so interesting, because everybody's trying to work so hard to extract any ounce of performance they can any way possible.
Yeah. I mean, it's what we're all doing, you know, I guess when we come to the line is try to perform to our best. So.
Well, Marty, our time on the Drag Zine podcast is coming to an end, and I love to give
That went so fast.
It just flies by. It's so much fun. But now it's the part where I give you the floor, and you get to be like John Force and rattle off who you want to thank and all your sponsors and where people can find you at. So, Marty, the floor is yours.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks, Brian. Of course, Garrett Advancing Motion, JBRE, Jeff Burns Racing Engines, Wade Hopkins and the team at Southern Speed Racing, Dave Caput and Doug at Performance Transmissions, UPR, Shonik Composites, Turbos Direct, RC Components, The Wheels, VP Racing Fuel, Schaefer Oil, Jack, Billet Atomizer, Diamond Pistons, Fuel Tech, MGP Rods. All these great companies help support my terrible habit, drag racing, and so if you get the chance to show them some support, please do. It doesn't hurt to tell them you appreciate them supporting drag racers and Marty Stinnett too, really. but it's just I've got a great team. The Lord's blessed me. I thank the Lord Jesus Christ for keeping me safe and all this stuff, allowing me to do this and let my car perform the way it does. My wife, Jennifer Stinnett, my kids, Keegan and Blake, my team, my employees at Stinnett Truck Repair and Towing LLC, the weight that they carry while I'm gone out of town to go drag racing for 3, 4, 5 days is astounding. And I got to thank them for what they do too, brother.
Right on. Now, is there any, do you have a Marty Stinnett Racing page or where any social media people can check out?
Right now it's just basically my Facebook page, Marty Stinnett. However, I'll be putting together a Marty Stinnett Racing page for sure. We sell t-shirts at the racetrack. Come by, say hi, man. I like to talk. You can tell I'm a crap shooter, and I like to talk and maybe sell a t-shirt, and that helps support the race fun. And who knows, maybe I'll help get some coil on plug, you know, something like that.
get that coil on plug action, right?
Get that coil on plug action, right? You know, a spare engine maybe, you know.
Bring those kids by, let them sit in the race car and honk the horn, right?
Bring them by, dude. I love it. Let them sit in the race car. They're not going to hurt that thing. They're not going to do anything to it I haven't already done or that Wade can't fix.
Yeah. You never know. They might fix a squeak or rattle for you.
That's right. That's right. The people that come help me, too, I guess my friends, they're Charles Cooper, Fred Pittman, Justin Reed, his dad, Jim Reed, their wives for letting them come help, man. I've got so many. I've just been so blessed with people that can just step up and help here and there, and really for no thanks at all, hardly, other than the fact they just cool and want to be there, you know. So, thanks to all those people and everybody that's helped me along the way. The fans that root for our car, the small block that come by and say how much they really dig seeing, you know, this little motor run with those old big motors, we appreciate it and thank them for everything.
Awesome, Marty. Thanks for stopping by, coming on the show, and look forward to seeing you at No Mercy and probably your same little pit spot in the back, right?
That's probably so. Yeah, I'm assuming that's where we'll be at, wherever Donald puts us.
As long as it's not in the weeds, right?
As long as it's not. Hey, he ain't putting a radio car in the weeds. Everybody knows that.
Right on. But thanks.
Hey, Stephanie ain't going to let him put us in the weeds. Ain't no doubt.
Yeah, no. Yeah, we all know who runs the show, right?
That's right.
Thanks again, Marty. Look forward to seeing you at the track.
All right. Thank you, Brian. Take care, bud.
Well, that wraps up the show for this week. Thanks to Marty for stopping by and doing some drag racing talking with us. And as always, may your reaction times be crisp and your win lights bright. Till next week, folks.